This is Anishinaabe Way, Lives, Words, and Stories of Ojibwe People.
Jill Dorfler from the Department of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota, Duluth.
We're here to talk about a book that you wrote called Those Who Belong, a comprehensive history of tribal identity, tribal membership, and the history of blood quantum. And you tell the story primarily within the context of constitutional reform efforts at the White Earth Reservation.
I thought for a long time about topics to study, and I was the first person in my family to go to college, and that's where I had more opportunities to learn about Anishinaabe history. I went to high school at Manoomin on the White Earth Reservation, and there was really very little included in the curriculum there, and so I was interested in learning more about our history and our government, and also interested in learning about why the Minnesota Chippewa tribe adopted a one-quarter blood quantum requirement in 1961. My personal connection to this story is that I'm a first-degree descendant, and I don't meet the one-quarter blood quantum threshold. And there are a lot of people my age and younger that fall into that category. And so I was encouraged by several people at White Earth to pursue this topic, and I was always told, this isn't our values, this isn't our way as Anishinaabe.
Historically, within the context of American history, Native Americans are really the only ethnicity who are asked to prove who we are as people.
Mm-hmm. The idea of tribal citizenship has been fluid throughout time. Historically, citizenship criteria were primarily family, kinship based, who are you related to, who are your parents, who is your clan for us as Anishinaabe, where do you live, where are your allegiances, how do you live your life. And then as we move into the 20th century, we move into card-carrying citizenship, the official legal kind of documentation kind of citizenship. The Minnesota Chippewa tribe adopted a constitution in 1936. It wasn't the first constitution, but it was an important one that still has a legacy and is still in place today. It basically said the Minnesota Chippewa tribe will determine citizenship requirements. It was kind of vague in the citizenship clause. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs said, well, you really need to define this more clearly, and we have some ideas for you, and these ideas are blood quantum and or residency. And so they discussed citizenship on a number of occasions. People knew that this was a very weighty topic. People would say in those meetings, this will affect our kids, this will affect our grandkids, we have to take this matter seriously. And they took a number of years before they passed a citizenship resolution. They were very deliberate in that it was lineal descent. In the records, they're very clear that we want this because we want to think about the future generations. We don't want to exclude anyone. Again, people made impassioned statements, and some people said things like, there was never in the past drawing a line. People were always included. We didn't discriminate against our fellow Indians. By the rules of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe Constitution, they had to send it to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and to the Secretary for approval. Well, it was rejected by the Secretary, stating that this will basically allow too many individuals to become tribal citizens, and the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe needs to think carefully about what they're doing.
Why do you think the tribe would settle on that in 1961?
I think they were pushed, and I think there were veiled and not so veiled threats of termination. Finally, the Bureau basically said, if you don't decide this, Congress is going to decide for you.
Some people at White Earth decided to take this on as part of the push towards constitutional reform.
In 2013, White Earth citizens were allowed to vote on a constitution. So it was a whole document that included both a whole new governing structure as well as new citizenship requirements. And there was, at that time, 80% of those individuals who voted in favor of adopting that new constitution. Then that put White Earth in the position of having to negotiate and work with the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. The efforts to figure out a way to work with the Minnesota Chippewa tribe to have them potentially accept that White Earth was going to govern under that constitution, but say still participate in the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, those efforts were unsuccessful. In early 2014, there were three new people elected into office at White Earth, and they did not support the new constitution.
Is it your sense that blood quantum was one of the main issues that caused a difference of opinion about constitutional reform in the MCT? Or was it more than that?
I think blood quantum was a part of it, but I definitely think it was more than that. So blood quantum and citizenship, as I said earlier, something that affects everyone and everyone's family. So everyone has a stake and an opinion on that.
And given that the idea of tribal membership is somewhat controversial, do you have a sense of how this issue might change in the near future?
The Bureau of Indian Affairs in the U.S. has over time backed away from that kind of interference in intertribal affairs. And so today we don't see that direct influence very often. We've seen a number of court decisions uphold and reinscribe tribal sovereignty. Tribes have the inherent authority to determine citizenship or membership. And so those are all signs that it's really up to us now. As tribes continue to gain economic importance, I think that also has a big influence on these other relationships with the U.S. and with states as well. So I do think we will continue to see tribes acting as sovereigns and determining and asserting that power and authority.
This is Anishinaabe Way, Lives, Words, and Stories of Ojibwe People, a series produced by Stacy Droulard with music by Keith Sekola. Funding for the series comes from the Minnesota Legacy Fund and WTIP Community Radio.